Welcome back. Happy New Year. I am Maliha Zazan, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Olive oil has been cherished by Mediterranean cultures for millennia. In our times, potential health benefits of this bitter fruit juice have turned it into the third largest and one of the fastest growing markets in the world. During the past 15 years, the consumption of olive oil more than doubled in North America, trebled in Northern Europe, and grew sixfold in parts of Asia. Americans are the third largest consumers of olive oil in the world, and its market is growing 10% annually. In his new book, Extra Virginity, The Sublime and a Scandalous World of Olive Oil, Tom Muller details the complex and incredible history of olive oil and how throughout its history, corrupt producers have developed numerous ways to adulterate it. One European investigator told him that dealing counterfeit olive oil brings, quote, profits comparable to cocaine with none of the risks. So what is really in that bottle of extra virgin olive oil sitting on your kitchen shelf? And how is this market regulated? And what makes the best olive oil? Tom Muller writes for The New Yorker and other publications. He has lived in Italy for the past 20 years, and today he joins us on the phone from Spokane, Washington. Happy New Year, Tom, and good to have you with us.
Thank you, Millie. It's great to be here.
What a fantastic, intriguing, scary, and hopeful book.
Well, thank you.
All in 200 and some pages. Really, it was really an amazing read. And I have to say, I read it in one sitting.
Well, thank you very much. Those are all of the emotions that I went through as I wrote the thing, starting with surprise that it was such a complex subject. But it has a lot of what humanity is all about, both in the past and in the present, good and bad. So it's a fun subject.
That's true. So that takes me to my first question. Why did you become interested in writing about history of olive oil and its political economy?
It really started with almost by chance. I'd been living in Italy for some time, and I was discussing with a magazine editor at the New Yorker possible assignments, and olive oil came up. And, you know, since I'd been living in Italy for some time and eating good olive oil, I figured I knew something about the subject. And very rapidly I found, after taking the assignment, that it was not nearly as simple nor as lighthearted as it seemed. The good was much better than I'd expected, and the bad far worse.
So you've lived, I mean, you have a really very interesting story about your old neighbor, mm-hmm. who has been cultivating and making olive oil for a long time. So did you yourself personally get involved in making olive oil?
I help him every year, and I've helped many other producers. I only have two trees at this point, so that's not going to make much of a crop. But I am working with people who make it, and I think that's an important part of understanding why it's so expensive to make the good stuff, because it's a lot of hard work at a rough time of the year. You know, it's sort of late autumn, early winter, and it's tough where I live. As you mentioned, my elderly neighbors are still making olive oil, but we live in a part of Liguria in Italy that has very steep slopes and lots of thin, narrow terraces, and it's very difficult, very physically taxing, to get up in those trees and pull the olives off. And of course, at 85 years of age, that gets to be a bit risky. He's climbing up on ladders and leaning out over terraces. And anyway, to pay someone to do that is a lot of money. And in order to make a profit, you have to be able to charge a fair price for your bottle of olive oil. And when you go down to town and see the shops selling pseudo extra virgin olive oil at far below half or less what he would have to charge to make a profit, you realize how difficult it is for them.
So we're going to talk about this a little more, but I'm just curious, how much does it cost on the average to make a good, pure, decent 16-ounce bottle of extra virgin olive oil?
Well, it really depends on the terrain. As I said, where we are, it's very steep. You can't use much mechanization, so you can't get tractors or anything up there. All you can do is some hand shakers and some wands that pull the hydraulic wands that pull the olives out of the trees. Other places where it's flat and you can drive big machinery, you can use an increasing range of mechanized techniques, which reduce the costs. and right on up to these huge harvesters that run right over a row of olive trees and pull the olives off without a human hand ever touching them. But basically, to come back to your question, where we live, we figure that people with the costs of producing a liter of olive oil are on the order of €8 a liter. So we're talking $10 a liter just to make the oil. Then, of course, you have to add in the bottling, the transportation, the marketing, if you do any. So that you can see that it gets right up there. And if you wanted to import that into America, still more transportation costs. So it's pretty pricey stuff.
And we import 98% of our olive oil.
That's right. The vast majority of what Americans eat is imported oil. Some of it excellent. I want to underscore that because many times I've been accused of attacking foreign imports and praising local production. That's not necessarily the case. Many of the best oils in the world are made in the Mediterranean, and some of the worst oils in the world are made in Los Angeles. So it's not. I'm by no means playing favorites here, but the fact is that a great percentage of the imported oil that people eat, or of the oil that people eat, is imported, and of that, a great percentage sadly doesn't make the grade.
So after I read your book, I went to my kitchen and I looked into the pantry, and I had two bottles of olive oil, and it had all these labels that I'm saying: extra virgin, first cold pressed, unfiltered, 100% Italian, 100% pure, product of Italy. You know, so what do these categories and terms really mean?
Yeah, well, it's a very, very good question. As part of the central problem here for the consumer is that the label simply no longer, if it ever did, no longer reflects what's in the bottle. Because the terms are created to be inherently confusing, and B, because they're not being policed in America. So for instance, first cold press is a good example. If it's extra virgin olive oil, first cold pressed is a complete. It's three lies in one. First, it has to be first pressed. It couldn't be second pressed extra virgin. So that's useless information. Cold, you can't get oil out of cold olives. They have to be at least 24, 25, 26 degrees Celsius, so, you know, nice and warm body temperature, even to get the oil out. And pressed, most oils now are made with a centrifuge rather than with a press. So first cold press is just anachronistic and basically empty. I would rather see, but that's part of the series of terms you mentioned, 100% Italian. 100% Italian what? Many times what is, in fact, sold as Italian olive oil has simply transited through Italy and been packed by an Italian packer, but it may well be made with Spanish or Tunisian oil. Pure is a great example. You've used that a couple times in our conversation, and I think it's a word that most people resonate with. Unfortunately, the term pure is used by the in America and elsewhere by the olive oil industry to mean refined. So, in fact, when you say pure olive oil in olive oil lingo, you're talking about refined oil, so not extra virgin at all. Extra light is another great example. Extra light, when I hear that, I instinctively think, well, it's going to be fewer calories. And, in fact, it's exactly the same, 120 calories per tablespoon as every other oil. It's just been refined so heavily that it's lost a lot of its color and its flavor and its nutritional benefits, and they sell that as extra light. So you can see that what you're faced with is a wall of basically meaningless data. You may well have some excellent olive oil on your shelf, but there's no way for you to tell before you crack open the bottle, and that's tough to do in a supermarket.
So what can we do? For example, I mean, when I told someone that extra virgin olive oil is not really necessarily extra virgin olive oil, they said, how would I know? So for an ordinary person who goes and picks up, you know, a bottle of olive oil, short of going to the mill and talking to the farmer and picking the olives yourself, how would you know?
Yeah, well, it's a very good question. One of the best ways to do it is to go to a store where you can taste before you buy. and ask the person who presumably who is running the store knows more about olive oil than the average shopkeeper some questions about why this oil is a little more bitter, why this oil is a little bit more mild, what are the defects, because the law really does lay out in very clear detail a number of official defects which aren't just food snobbery, but reflect the inherent chemical and health nature of the oil you're having. And by the same token, the good qualities, we mentioned bitterness and also pungency and a scent of olive fruit or fruit in general, those are indications, broadly speaking, that the oil does have health benefits, the anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties that olive oil is famous for, good olive oil is famous for. If to answer your friend's question, if they're simply in a store where all they have is bottles in front of them and labels, the bottles should be ideally dark glass to protect the oil. Again, oil is fresh-squeezed fruit juice. It's a perishable seasonal product, and heat, light, and oxygen are the enemies of fresh oil. It'll go off. So a dark glass bottle, I'd love to see a harvest date on that bottle. Not all great oils have a harvest date, but that's a sign of real seriousness on the part of the producer that he or she knows very well that this is, you know, this year's harvest is the one you want, and next year's harvest may be good, but this year's harvest is likely to be better. Olive oil doesn't get any better with time like wine. It only gets worse. On that bottle, on that label, I'd love to see the specific place of production. You know, where exactly on the globe was this made? Not, you know, the sort of catch-all phrase, made from olives in one of the following countries, Spain, Tunisia, Morocco, Argentina, but much more specific. Who made it and where it was made? And quite often, although not always, a mention of the specific kind of olive that it was made from, or olives, because you can have blends as well. The specific cultivar of olive is an indication that the person who's making it is serious about the kind of oil they're producing and that they're looking to educate the consumer rather than simply pull the wool over his eyes.
And that's the voice of Tom Mueller, the author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and a Scandalous World of Olive Oil. He first wrote about the massive fraud in olive oil industry in a 2007 New Yorker article, and you can find that on our website at yourcallradio.org. And we also want to hear from you. I'm sure this is a topic that is of interest to many of you. And have you ever thought about the kind of olive oil you're buying? How do you decide what to buy? Are you willing to pay more for something that you can trust? Is olive oil an important part of the culture you come from? What does olive oil mean to you culturally, the way you use it in your food? And Tom talks about how really different communities come together, have created cooperatives in Greece, in Italy, to harvest olives, to make olive oil. So if you want to join us and if you have questions for Tom or you want to talk about your own experience with olives and olive oil, you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or call us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. So, Tom, it was very interesting to read about sort of the process of how this adulteration happens. Italy is the world's leading importer, consumer, and exporter of olive oil. And you say adulteration is especially common in Italy. And you write that in August, this is one example you give, and if you can elaborate on this. You say, on August 10th, 1991, a rusty tanker called Mazal 2 docked at the international port of Ordu in Turkey, pumped 2,200 tons of hazelnut oil in its hold. By the time it ended up in the port of Puglia in southern Italy, the cargo was officially was documented as Greek olive oil. And then it slipped through the customs, possibly with the help of some official, was piped into tankers, went to a refinery, and it was labeled and sold to consumers. So who are the major players here? How common is the story that this one story that you write in your book?
Well, the situation is that at current In Italy, there is a great deal of policing of the problem, but very few actual arrests and convictions. So adulteration for certain people, and again, the vast majority in terms of number of producers are honest and they make a wonderful oil, or they make an oil that is not adulterated. The wonderful oils are sadly fewer and fewer because fewer and fewer people can afford to produce them, given that they're being undercut by the false stuff. But the situation in 1991, hazelnut oil happens to be chemically quite similar to olive oil in certain key ways, and difficult when you mix only a certain amount of hazelnut oil with olive oil to determine to pick it out as adulteration. And that happened to be cheap at the time, and so hazelnut oil was used. Nowadays, it's more common. Sadly, hazelnut oil probably costs more than a lot of olive oil these days because the price of olive oil, because of this sort of behavior, has been driven steadily down. Also, the production has gone up around the world, but at the same time, standards have remained low enough, and this and adulteration has become common enough that you can see a steady slide in the value of extra virgin olive oil. And I use extra virgin with quotation marks. A lot of the stuff that's sold, well, right now on the European market, you can get a liter of extra virgin olive oil, quote unquote, for about €1.85. Now, we were talking earlier about something on the order of €8 production costs. Of course, that's an extremely high cost in difficult terrain, but a €1.85 for a liter of olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, is an open joke. And everyone's playing that game. Right now, a more common, because olive oil is so cheap, a more common adulterant is simply what they call deodorized olive oil. It's actually made from olives, but olives quite often that are very, very poor quality. They may have been sitting around the ground for a few months.
They're called lampante.
They're taken to a mill and made into oil that, as you can predict, make it made from rotten fruit. Smells rotten. It has all the classic defects, or many of the classic defects that are pointed out by the law as disqualifying an oil from extra virgin, from the extra virgin grade. And then that oil is simply refined at low temperature. They call it soft column refining or deodorizing. And that, as the term indicates, removes the bad smells, the bad tastes. It also removes a lot of all the good smells and the good tastes, and a lot of the medicinal benefits of olive oil. And that completely dumbed down neutral substance is then mixed with a little bit of real extra virgin olive oil to give it some character and sold as extra virgin. Now, it may be made from olives instead of hazelnut oil, which is a pretty tasty oil, actually.
But it's not olive oil.
The consumer, it's not extra virgin olive oil. It's not what the consumer asked for. It's been modified in a refinery. It may well be oxidized and full of free radicals. It's simply not the elixir of health that people are buying when they reach for a bottle of extra virgin olive oil. And at the same time, as we've said before, it's doing untold damage to the honest growers, because if you can go on the open market and get quote-unquote extra virgin olive oil in Spain or Greece or Italy for €1.85 and very likely in North Africa for less, and then sell it with the same label as an honest producer would be selling it, you're really undercutting them economically.
So let's take some calls. Alex in San Francisco.
Oh, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. So how do I go to the store and get the real thing?
Good question, Alex. It's one that we've touched on earlier, but trying to find a place where you can taste before you buy and ask some good questions. Look for a harvest date and a specific place of production on the bottle. If you're living in San Francisco, you have a lot of different options of places to go, and you're fortunate. As a matter of fact, just a little north or south of where you are, or east of where you are, there are some good mills as well. So you have a range of options. If you were calling from the middle of America, it would be a little tougher, but even there, stores are beginning to spring up. Specialty stores are beginning to spring up that offer this, and there are some very good, the widely distributed oils throughout America that are first-rate olive oil. I can think of two also made in California that are available across the country. California Olive Ranch is one. And Corto Olive is another. Mm-hmm. They're really sold in places side by side with the Bertolli's and Carapelli's, the cheap imports of this world. and yet there are worlds better in terms of quality.
Oh, do you list them in your book?
Yes, actually, it's in the appendix of your book. It's choosing good olive oil.
There's an appendix, and I've put up a website that'll be constantly updated over the coming months and years, in which I list a number of recommendations. Wow. You can imagine it's difficult to point people specifically to one place. Tell someone who happens to live in Kansas City, to take that as an example, where they should go to get good olive oil. But I'm doing the best I can to point people in the right direction and mention a number of good brands. That's extravirginity.com. So it's the same as the book with a .com on the end.
Thank you for that call, Alex. And let's go to Cynthia in Santa Cruz. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I read an article. I don't know where I was. Maybe it was in New Yorker, but I was reading an article about olive oil. Maybe it was your article. And I needed some olive oil, so I went to my local, long-standing market that has pretty good produce, and they have olive oils that range from low to high. And so they had one marked down to $10, and I was looking for one. I'll try one from California, so maybe it'll be, more real. And so I bought this stuff, and it's called Napa Valley Naturals. And I opened it up, and it has, no flavor. So now as I'm listening to your show, I'm reading the label, and it says, some of this oil is from Argentina, and some of it's from the Sacramento Valley. So it says Napa Valley Naturals. So I thought maybe it was from Napa Valley. How silly. And then I'm looking at the bottle, and it also doesn't have any bottling date. And it does say first cold press, and it says at below 98.5 degrees, is what it says.
Yeah. Well, that's the one piece of honesty on that label, I think. you can't press them real cold or no oil comes out. So that's a kind of a losing proposition to start with. I think Napa Valley Naturals does what a lot of people do from all over the world and claim that they're from a place when they're actually using product from somewhere else. And I think your point is very I mentioned some names from California who are really doing the wrong thing. It's not just a practice that's limited to the Mediterranean. There are some, because it's such a lucrative and growing industry or market, and because no one is minding the shop. I mean, the FDA simply cannot, they tell me, they cannot, they don't have the resources to look into olive oil. It's unfortunately a great situation to be in if you want to sell fake stuff as the real stuff and reap the profits. Unfortunately, everybody loses out. Even the fraudsters lose out because their margins are getting smaller and smaller and smaller as extra virgin olive oil, a once great quality crop, is becoming a commodity.
So we are definitely going to talk about small farmers versus this big multinational corporations. Cynthia, you had another question. We have only 30 seconds, so go ahead. Cynthia?
I think we lost her.
I think we lost her. And that's Tom Muller, the author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and a Scandalous World of Olive Oil. He's written this very intriguing book about the history of olive oil and how unethical, how low the ethical standards of olive oil industry really are. He lives in a medieval stone farmhouse surrounded by olive oil in outside of Genoa in Italy. And he knows a thing or two about olives, and It's great to have him on today. So if you want to join us, ask him questions, you have some experiences with olive oils, send us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Call us at 866-798-8255. I am Malihe Razazan, and this is Your Call.
You're listening to Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. A big thank you to everyone who stepped up at the end of last year to provide a year-end donation to KALW. Here's a way to make your dollars go even further. Talk to your company about a matching gift, which can even double or triple your donation. KALW members working at more than 125 companies have already taken the step of asking their employers to match their contributions to KALW. You can do the same. Ask your HR department if your company has a matching gift program, then fill out some simple paperwork. Easy money for us, and you'll feel better knowing that your money's going even further to local public radio, KALW. And thanks.
For those of you joining us now, I am Malihe Razazan, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We are podcasting our show. You can find out more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow on our agenda for New Economy, we'll talk about what makes a more just 2012 when we talk about economy. On the next Your Call, we're going to talk about concrete ways we can resist crony capitalism and narrow the gap between the 1% and the rest of us. Where do you see glimmers of hope for economic change in this new year? And on Wednesday, we are going to have a conversation about the Republican Party. Who's the base of the Republican Party today? Who's leading it? And who's paying the bills? Republican candidates are spending an upward of $8 million on advertisement in Iowa alone. And if you have any show ideas, you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or call us 866-798-8255. But today we're talking about olive oil and its complex history. I mean, we're going to talk a little about its complex history, but I think the present time has so much crime and shadowy business involved in it that I think we should spend some more time to talk about what's going on now. Olive oil industry is the third largest and one of the fastest growing markets in the U.S. alone. It's a $1.5 billion industry, and Americans are the third largest. And we are joined by Tom Mueller, the author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and a Scandalous World of Olive Oil. He first wrote about the massive fraud in olive oil industry in a 2007 New Yorker article, and you can find that on our website at yourcallradio.org. And we also want to hear from you. Have you ever thought about what kind of olive oil you are buying? How do you decide on what to buy? What is your connection historically, culturally to olive oil? And is olive oil an important part of your life? Do you have memories of cooking with olive oil that you like to share, or questions that you like to answer? The number to call, 866-798-8255, or feedback@yourcallradio.org. So last year, Tom, University of California, Davis, did a study that found 69% of imported extra virgin olive oil sampled from California supermarket failed to meet requirements to merit that label. And on the other hand, 90% of California produced samples did. So how is this policed when olive oil bottles get into the United States? What exactly happens at the custom and then when they enter United States?
To answer your question in a nutshell, it's not policed. Unfortunately, the olive oil, as you can imagine, with the current series of priorities in food safety, olive oil does not measure up to salmonella and botulism and bioterrorism and so on. Having said that, one of the worst food poisoning events in modern history involves oil, rapeseed oil, denatured with aniline, an industrial chemical that caused 800 deaths and 20,000 hospitalizations in Madrid in 1981. So, it's not to say there isn't a risk when you have people putting things in bottles that don't correspond to the label. But olive oil is considered a low priority by the FDA, and only 0.3% of food that comes into America is tested in any way, shape, or form, and that includes barcode scans. So it's not just olive oil that doesn't get a whole lot of scrutiny at the port of entry.
But Europeans are not doing that much better either, are they?
Well, I think they are. I think they're doing, there's a lot more on-the-ground investigation. Mm-hmm. The Spanish Guardia Civil and the Italian Guardia di Finanza and the Carabinieri they have pretty specialized, pretty active and widespread cores that go around and investigate and do, you know, call out some fraud. And there's been some recent interesting developments in Italy where a number of top companies have been identified as using very low grade North African oil and calling it Italian. But that's nothing is new under the sun. The problem is that what gets exported is by no means the same as what's sold in the domestic markets. Many European countries, Italy is a great example. Italy makes some of the finest oils in the world, And they also, as you said earlier on, consume more olive oil than anyone else. And not surprisingly, they keep a lot of the good stuff for themselves. There's a lot more demand for great oil in Italy than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. What goes out and what gets imported, especially to gets exported, especially to a country where there is no oversight, like the U.S., is a pretty low average. Now, the importers will say, well, we're following the rules of the International Olive Council, and that's a historic organization that has created the rules for many countries anyway.
Someone told you United States is a dream state for oil criminals.
Yeah, that may even have been me, because unfortunately, it really is. It's a very fast-growing market, the third largest in the world, and no one's checking. So, and it's not just imports. I think I think the UC Davis report is an excellent report, and is based on the latest science. The one thing I would want to adjust in that report is that the California oils were kind of an all-star group, and if they had taken some of the really low-grade oils that are available, made in California, but mm-hmm. probably from oil made elsewhere, that average would have dropped significantly. I mean, don't get me wrong, some of the greatest oils I've ever tasted are Californian, but there's some pretty awful stuff mm. and some pretty illegal stuff made in California, too. So it's not only the Italians or the Mediterraneans who are bending or breaking the rules.
So we have full lines. Let's take some calls. We have Cynthia back from Santa Cruz. Cynthia?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry I hung up too. I thought you were just... I just with me before, so I hung up. But I wanted to ask about, Trader Joe's. It's funny because I bought this, kind of expensive olive oil, Napa Valley Naturals, that's really has no flavor. But yet when I buy the cheaper stuff from Trader Joe's, it really has a better flavor. And then, the other thing is that I bought some grapeseed oil. You just mentioned it. And then I look on the can and it says it's from Italy. And then it says, and then it has like, look for these labels, and it has gold taste from the Quality Institute International, but it's from 2003.
Yeah, that's you often get medal, gold medal at the LA County Fair from 2001, and that doesn't tell you a whole lot about the kind of oil that's in your bottle today. Trader Joe's, I don't know enough about their business model, and I haven't had enough personal experience to say. I do know that the two bottles of Trader Joe's oil that I've tasted were substandard, were defective. But I know also that local stores get what they can, and quite often, I mean, they may have access to good oil as well as bad. But I have been personally disappointed, and I'm kind of surprised. I have to say, same thing for Whole Foods, at least in my limited experience. The 365 brand just doesn't measure up. I mean, it's not extra virgin. And I've tried four or five because I've been curious about that. Seems like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods should be leading the quality charge. And at least in my anecdotal limited experience, they're not.
And UC Davis research, when they tested olive oils from a variety of places, actually Whole Foods failed.
That connects directly with my personal experience. The store brand 365, it seems like it should be their sort of statement about the quality of their store. Store brand should be excellent, and in this case, they're not.
Thank you for that call. Let's go to Charles in Carmel Valley. Charles? Carlisle?
Yeah, hi.
Good morning. Sorry.
That's okay. Hi. Yeah, I have two questions. I'm a small olive grower, and also, but I want to ask you: is there any difference with the organic label? Are we guaranteed anything with that? And then also, a big push that some of us have been working on is a fair trade label. So let's say it does come from North Africa, is that people are getting the right pricing, and Americans are really resonating with a fair trade label, and we don't really have one in the United States, and it doesn't seem like we're getting one from the USDA or whoever puts it out, so maybe we need to do it for ourselves. But and basically my suggestion is know your grower.
Yeah, I think that know your grower is absolutely the number one thing I say when people ask me, well, how do I get good stuff, is, well, how close to a mill do you live? And that's the ideal world situation. You folks in California are spoiled by the range of possibilities they have. elsewhere is going to be more difficult. But I totally agree with you that know the name of the person, where they live, where the olives are grown that the that makes the oil you're tasting. USDA Organic, unfortunately, that, again, I've seen that on oil that wasn't even made from olives. So I it's safe to say that that is not a guarantee. It may appear on excellent oils, but it's not a guarantee. I completely agree with you about fair trade. It comes back to know your grower and support your grower. If the grower, like my neighbor up in the hills in Liguria, is getting a fair price for a very expensive to make product, as you as a grower must know, Carly, then that's a good thing, and that ensures the future supplies of great oil will continue. Otherwise, I'm seeing in the Mediterranean massive abandonment of groves because people just aren't getting a fair price for their product.
Talking about growers, we have a listener. We have an email from a listener. Allison says, "I buy my olives at the farmers market from Napa Growers. The company is called Berkeley Olive Grove, grown in Oroville. They seem very knowledgeable about and are incredibly enthusiastic and love to talk about the oil. It has the date on the bottle, and the one I bought is mild as opposed to medium or robust. It's always mellow with time, but best by August 2012. That's what it says on the label. What do you know about the Northern California producers? You talked about it a little bit. And she says, I didn't know the bitter was the best and usually don't choose that just from tasting, but will gravitate toward that in the future.
Right. Well, I know the Berkeley Olive Groves people, and they are extremely enthusiastic, and this year's oil has been excellent. At least the ones that I've tasted are first rate. They make it from ancient Mission olives that give it, for anyone who has any kind of sensitivity to the history of this product, give it an extra appeal. I have spent a lot of time, I've been fortunate to spend a lot of time in Central and Northern California over the last year and a half, 2 years, and I know a number of first-rate growers and oil makers. So, as I said, folks in your neck of the woods are spoiled by the possibilities if they know how to find the stuff. I've already mentioned Cor and Corto. There's the Olive Press in Sonoma, which is fantastic. McAvoy Ranch in Petaluma, which makes fabulous oil. A fellow we were talking about, farmers markets. A fellow that I feature in my book, Mike Madison, in Winters, who doesn't sell online, doesn't sell by phone, doesn't ship. He only sells at the farmers market in Davis, and he makes oils that are superb. One that caught my attention last year, made from the same olives that my neighbors use, Tajasca, but a completely different character to the oil from the one that I'm used to. So there's a lot of skilled people working in olive oil in Central and Northern California. They just need to have more support from the authorities to make sure that they're not undercut by unfair competition.
And he's a very interesting character also. He says that he's not selling his oil to make money. So he's making it very affordable and accessible for people who come to the farmers market.
Right. That's very much what you see around the Mediterranean. This is not, you know, a Grand Cru bottle of fine wine. This is a daily comestible. This is something that you put in many different dishes, and you should feel free to use it generously, liberally. It's good for you. I mean, you know, within reason, the more you have, the better it is. So I think that Mike Madison's approach to that is that it also squares with his kind of pre-industrial revolution view of how people should be eating and how people should be transacting commerce. It's very interesting to spend some time with him.
Another email says, "I use olive oil to pop popcorn. Is that silly? Might it influence the flavor?"
Well, you know, it might. If you like it, it probably influences it positively. Certainly, if you cook an oil to high heat, you may experience not degradation in the quality of the oil per se, but in the taste. And if you use a very, very strong oil in a very delicate food, you may well end up tasting the oil rather than the fillet of sole or whatever it is you're cooking. But, you know, if you're cooking popcorn and liking it, it's going to be healthier than butter by a good margin. And it's not going to degrade. The smoke point of real extra virgin olive oil is quite high, so it's healthy. I would say go with your taste in that one.
We have another email from a caller. From a listener says, "What about when we use the oil to cook? Hard to use, hugely expensive oil for cooking."
I understand this position. I personally think, well, it depends on your definition of usually expensive. I think it's a bit analogous to wine, that you wouldn't use a great big 30-year-old Barolo to you know, cook your pork chops with or whatever. You'd use something more affordable. But you do want to have something that's good for you, so you don't want to just get the cheapest stuff you can find in the store. And that's what I see people doing. They go to two extremes. They may buy a very, very fancy, hopefully good, olive oil and expensive for their salads, but then they cook in the most abysmal stuff you've ever seen. And that's not healthy. I mean, the stuff that you get that's really low grade isn't going to be as good for you. And quite often, even if you cook at high heat, it will negatively influence the flavor.
And that's Tom Muller, the author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and a Scandalous World of Olive Oil. And he has written this very, very interesting story. We haven't touched upon the history of it, but if you get a copy, you can read all about the history going back to the Roman times and even first time that it was kind of discovered, you say, in Palestine in 4th century BC. And if you want to join us, 866-798-798-8255, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's take another caller. Jane in Marin?
Yes.
Good morning, Jane.
This is a marvelous program, and I've heard the author before, and I think he's sensational, and I can't wait to go out and get the book. I have several questions, if I may. First of all, what about cooking? All right, is it all right to mention brands?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Okay, I'm looking at a bottle of Star Extra Light in Flavor for baking, frying, deep frying, and I would like your comment on that. I'd also like to know the shelf life of olive oil. And incidentally, there's no date on this bottle. It talks about Mediterranean, but it doesn't tell me where it came from or what date. It says used before December 2012. So I want to know about that, and also using it in baking in place of butter, which I would prefer to do. And also, have you been to our Marin Farmers Market, and are there any good olive oils sold up there? I know McVoy, and you mentioned something, Corto something. I didn't get the rest of that name. And
right. Well, I'll start from the top. Star is a brand that I'm familiar with. It's very widely distributed. I've bought it in Safeway a number of times. Extra Light in Flavor, that's at least one step forward from just plain Extra Light, which you often read, which leads you to believe that it's actually lighter, lower in calories, and that's not the case. It's basically saying, look, we'll dumb down your oil to the point where it doesn't taste of anything, and we'll charge you more for it. That seems to me not optimal from the consumer's point of view. It may well be fine for baking, for cooking, but it's not going to improve your food, and it's not made. Your question about best buy dates, unfortunately, in many cases, well, the best buy date is determined starting from when you bottle the oil, not when it was made. So that oil can be sitting out in a tank for 2 years before they even put it in the bottle. And then the clock starts on the best buy date. They add another 2 years to that, and you've got four-year-old oil sitting in front of you. as we said earlier in the show, that, you know, oil is a fresh produce. It degrades rapidly. So, you know, that is not ideal from the consumer's point of view. Shelf life, we've said, from the moment the olives are pressed, at least after a month's time, when some oils can get a little better because they kind of compose themselves and are racked, it never gets any better. It only gets worse. It's a fresh squeezed fruit juice. That's the way to think of it.
And Tom,
I have had very good. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, that's go ahead.
I had very good luck and very good experiences with baking with olive oil. I've even had croissants and cakes made with olive oil, ice cream made with olive oil. It, I think it takes a certain amount, the croissants in particular, which are basically just originally just butter and flour, take a lot of trial and error to get right. But I've had cooks produce excellent croissants, slightly green but delicious, out of olive oil. Now, the Marin Farmers Market, I haven't had the good luck to go there yet, but I hope to do so in a couple weeks' time, as a matter of fact. So I can't mention specific oils that are available there, but the oils we talked about a little earlier are made at, one is in Sonoma, the Olive Press, and they make a range of excellent oils. We mentioned California Olive Ranch and Corto Olive, which are two very good brands supplied in supermarkets head-to-head with the big importers, but far better. So I'm betting that if you walked around, Marin Farmers Market, you'll get some very, very good.
And Tom, I was surprised to find out that Kirkland Organic olive oil, UC Davis research found out, they did all this taste testing, that to be accurately labeled as extra virgin.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think Costco, I know, at least from my personal experience, that Costco is well above the average in terms of looking after quality. I'm not saying that all the oils they sell are good, but I know that Kirkland makes the grade, and they also sell, at least in the stores that I've been in, Corto Olive, which is excellent oil at a remarkably low price. So Costco is doing the right thing as far as I can tell.
And we're going to take a couple of more callers, but I just want to talk to you about the small local producers of olive oil. You spoke with Andreas Mars, a Swiss economist and olive farmer who began his own investigation into olive oil adulteration in 2004, and he told you, so long as the smelly rancid oils and first-rate oils with the perfume of fresh olives bear the same name, quality producers in Italy and throughout the Mediterranean have no possibility of covering their costs. So long as olive producers are unable to earn a fair profit for their olives and olive oil, groves will die out. So how seriously local farmer producers, which are not able to compete with large-scale producers, survive? I mean, because some of them I read in your book and on your website that are going out of business. They're going bankrupt.
It's an enormous problem. Where I live, at least 50% of the olive groves, probably more like 75%, are abandoned. There simply aren't enough people in the countryside and no margins to pick those olives and make oil out of them. The ones that are made, like my neighbors in Gino Rosetta, they make olive oil for their family, so they're not intending to sell it in the first place. And that's about the only reason in many places where for which olive oil is being made these days. And it's around the Mediterranean, despite some government subsidies, which are pretty substantial when you add them all up. People are just losing out all over the world. In Australia, people are in bad straits because of being undercut by, as Andrea says, he has a very colorful turn of phrase, but smelly rancid. I mean, a lot of these things, those are official defects. If an oil has one defect, it's not extra virgin, and it should not be labeled that.
Mm. We have 3 minutes left, and we have full lines almost. Pat in Menlo Park? Pat? Okay. Let's go to Paul in Oakland.
Hi, Tom. I love your book. I wanted to ask you a question, what you thought about our local company, Veronica Foods, and their sort of business model that maybe is sort of designed after what's going on in the coffee bean business or with wines, going to regions around the world where things are grown at different times in really wonderful ways, and then producing these olive oils and bringing them to our country so we have seasonal extra virgin olive oil that's fresh on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think the Veronica Foods model, and if you've read my book, you've seen that I talk a lot about them. The concept of freshness and of really focusing on where you're going to get around the world the freshest olive oil at any given moment is something that has become a mantra for them, and they do it awfully, awfully well. And they're opening stores. Well, they are supplying oil to a growing network of stores around the country in places where you really don't expect to see specialty olive oil stores. And it's really heartening to see. We talked a little bit about the downside of the olive oil industry, but they're definitely the upside. They are pushing quality out to places and getting that first taste of great stuff in people's mouths. And that's where the light bulb goes on, and that's where the change happens.
And that's Tom Muller, the author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and Scandalous World of Olive Oil. So we are running out of time. We are to the end of our program. So I just want to ask you a question. The first thing that people do when they want to buy olive oil, what is it? One thing that they absolutely have to look for.
Freshness. I think that is the word that really needs to resonate in people's minds. This is a fresh squeezed fruit juice. This is a perishable agricultural product, seasonal, and not an infinite shelf-life industrial fat. So people have to think of it in those terms. Get it fresh, take care of it, and eat it fast.
And thank you for that suggestion. Tom Muller, the author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and a Scandalous World of Olive Oil. Thank you so much for spending your hour with us, Tom.
Thank you very much, Malihia. This is great.
It was really a pleasure. And thank you for listening. Thank you for all your calls and your emails. Please stay tuned to hear what's coming up tomorrow. How can we make a more just economy in 2012? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about concrete ways we can resist crony capitalism and narrow the gap between the 1% and the rest of us. What should we be demanding, and how can we keep economic inequality in the conversation during this election year? Join us live at 10 or send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Where do you see glimmers of hope for economic change? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our daily podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ellie Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David Latulipe is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in San Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.